This is the Urban Political,
the podcast on urban theory, research, and activism.
We delve into contemporary urban issues with scholars, activists, and policymakers from around the world,
providing informed views, state-of-the-art knowledge, and unusual insight. The podcast aims to advance our understanding of urban environment and how we might make them more just and democratic.
Welcome to the Urban Political Podcast. This week's podcast, Reclaiming the Tourist City, explores the rise of tourism as a political subject in today's cities. As in many other places, Berlin has experienced a huge boom in tourism over the last 10 years. We'll be exploring this political issue in relation to a very particular site in the city, Checkpoint Charlie. What we're interested in particular is how this process has unfolded around a development controversy, and what this means for left-wing politics in the city, and the broader relevance of the case for cities worldwide. In Berlin, we have the particularly interesting context of having, since 2016, a left of center coalition government of the Social Democrats, the Left Party, and the Greens.
My name is Markus Kipp, and I'm your host together with my colleague Ross Beveridge. This is part two, looking at the attempts to regain democratic control over the development process at Checkpoint Charlie. In part one, we looked at the issues of heritage and urban development at Checkpoint Charlie. We considered the question of what it would mean to do justice to the heritage at Checkpoint Charlie and how to reconnect this tourist bubble back to the urban society of Berlin. And I'd just like to begin with a statement from Teresa Kailacker, whom we heard before, who is an architect and an activist around heritage issues in Berlin, and she has been very outspoken at the Checkpoint Charlie, and this is her assessment of the governing coalition.
It's the first time, obviously, that we have that window of opportunity with the more left-wing government and the more, maybe, the Greens standing for more sustainable development, that we have a constellation in politics who see it differently, which I think is a big chance to make sure that Checkpoint Charlie is not becoming a purely commercially developed site, which has no authentic memory of the past.
This episode is focused on the political processes around the Checkpoint Charlie case, and we'll be hearing from Christoph Sommer again, a researcher at the Humboldt University and activist engaged with this issue of Checkpoint Charlie and tourism in Berlin more generally. We'll be hearing from a parliamentarian from the Left Party, Katalin Genborg, who will talk about the intransparency around this process, this urban development of Checkpoint Charlie.
It shows what task we have to face now, because if you see how many intransparent contracts are made to develop places all the time, then you see what is one of the big problems. Because what happened at Checkpoint Charlie was Trockland was not even the owner of the plots. They just had an idea, they had a good lobby, and they had a lot of social democrats working for them. So, and then they had the directly contact to the Bürgermeister. And that brought them to this level of, being able to say what they want. They had the money, they organized the money, and as well, they have a lot of developments in the whole city, so they were well known as investors.
Yeah, so I think the development of Checkpoint Charlie was quite for a long time classic example for backroom politics. And like Katalin Genbuch rightly states, and then this backdoor politics or development process was opened up by an engaged public. But in more general terms, it is maybe interesting that in Berlin, we can observe from my point of view that there are these old school modes of governance, with the strong connections to investors and so on, existing. But at the same time, there are more progressive projects which are much more participatory. So these different modes of governance, they do not, they seem to us as scientists maybe contradictory, but in practice they work. So we can observe these different modes of project development and governance at the same time. And
sorry, in the Checkpoint Charlie process, both are operating at the same time.
In the Checkpoint Charlie process, it was like that we had at the beginning the classic backdoor politics issue. So this was problematized by the issue public, if you want it like that, that emerged during the process, and this was problematized, scandalized in a way, and that helped to open up the process a little bit. So this is the Checkpoint Charlie case. But when you look on a more general level at urban development projects in Berlin, then in my opinion, you can observe at least two modes of governance in such real estate projects. Now, when you think, for example, about the Haus der Statistik, which is really, really designed in a more participatory way. So this is really a project which represents much more the ambition of a social democratic green party, left-wing party understanding of urban politics. But at the same time, you have these old connections, of course, which still have effects until today. So like we see it at the Checkpoint Charlie place, which was opened up very, very lately. By an engaged issue public.
Mm. So experts.
Experts. In this case, experts. And later on, very, very few very, very few residents entered the process. Because today there are not so many people really living in the area next to Checkpoint Charlie.
Another account from Katalin Genbuch, the left party politician, in which she, I think, has a different account of such urban politics and what's the task ahead for the party at Checkpoint Charlie.
In this place, for me, it was not only about how should Checkpoint Charlie in general look like, or what could be a better touristic attraction or alternative touristic attraction. It was more the general aim of cutting out this piece from the general ongoing valorization in the whole city. Mm-hmm. And if you have the chance to take off one plot or another, then you should do it. This is what I think. We should definitely have a look on the whole city and to see how we can cut out pieces from the general making money policy what we're facing everywhere.
There is this taking over the city plot by plot. Is that the approach of the current government?
Of course, there is a recommunalization debate going on in Berlin, and this is more than a debate. There is a recommunalization taking place. The government is buying back apartment houses, for example, and of course, in the case of Checkpoint Charlie. And to get back to the question how to reintegrate Checkpoint Charlie again into the inner city life, the question of buying at least parts of the empty spaces back is at the table, on the table, and at the moment it looks like that there seems to be political support to buy back at least the area which is planned for the museum. So I think that when I look back at the planning process, that for a long time all three political parties involved in the coalition right now did not very much take care about Checkpoint Charlie. So they, from my point of view, thought that the deal would work, the letter of intent between the Senate, and which was not official, the letter of intent between the Senate and the investor would work and everything, and nobody would care about Checkpoint Charlie. And of course, this was not the case. And so the parties slowly started to engage into this process. They obviously came to the conclusion that a left-wing social democratic green coalition needs to do more about a place at a place like Checkpoint Charlie than realizing a standard real estate project. Yeah.
So what role does ownership play in this whole debate? Gen Burg seems to suggest that it is important, ownership. Meanwhile, the urban development representative of the Green Party faction, Daniela Billig, seems to don't think that this is an important issue, and this is what she says.
Es ist für uns halt in diesem B-Plan erstens wichtig, oder was wir tun können, sind die Freiflächen. Was wir tun können, ist festlegen, dass Wohnbebauung auf jeden Fall oder Wohnungen dort auf jeden Fall auch vorhanden sind. Und ansonsten ist natürlich auch...
Our plan B is focused on the empty spaces, ensuring that apartments are built. Apart from that, it's unclear what kind of ownership structure there should be in the future. To a certain extent, I'm dispassionate about this. It is important to me that something sensible would be developed at Checkpoint Charlie, but who ultimately is responsible for this is secondary. It could be the investor who always wanted to do this, it could be the state of Berlin, if we are sure we have the funds to buy it back, it could be someone completely different. What is important in the plan B is that something should be developed and something should be designed.
Das kann jemand ganz anders sein. Mir ist wichtig, dass wir zum Beispiel mit dem B-Plan festlegen, was da gestaltet wird, was da entwickelt wird.
Yeah, from my point of view, it is absolutely important to get control over the land again. Yeah, and we're not talking about the whole area which is going to be developed. We are talking about nearly 2,500 square meters of 9,000 square meters. So these 2,500 square meters need to be bought back by the state of Berlin to have the control over the site. So it would not work that the state of Berlin rents the museum, for example, from the investor, because for the investor it is only reasonable to build the museum when it is when it has 3,000 square meters exhibition area. This is much too big. This would destroy the heritage value of the place, and so it makes no sense to leave it to an investor to build a museum here. It is much better to have the control as State of Berlin and then to have an open discussion about how to deal with this empty spaces. Do we need a museum at all? What kind of museum do we need? How can the space itself speak? So control is in this case the only way.
I think just reflecting back on what Frau Billig said, the ownership wasn't important, and I think that reflects probably quite a lot of broader green politics at the moment, that they don't have a clear idea of or necessarily want to present a clear idea of how to deal with these kinds of questions, not just in the short term, but in the long term. Because as you said, if you have ownership of land, you can control it. You are then freer from the pressures of development if you are actually the owner. And then just to think, obviously, of the context that we know well in Berlin and other cities, how much public land has been sold off, particularly in the last 20 years, huge amounts of public land. And as soon as you give up the land, then you give up a great deal of the control you can have of the process. And obviously, it's not to say that public ownership, just public ownership, is by itself the kind of magic solution. But certainly, if you want to talk about democratic control over urban development, you need to have some form of public ownership, you know, even if it's not just anchored in the local state.
But is the current process of rethinking and reshaping the development plan not already a win from the left coalition?
I agree. These are achievements explicitly that there won't be any hotel at this place. There are achievements, but we unfortunately have to wait a little bit longer, because now the question is open: how big will the museum be? When it's too big, it will destroy the heritage value we talked about. When it's smaller, then this will be much better. So the government achieved something, but we absolutely have to take into account that without a huge media debate, without public engagement, this government would have not achieved these goals. So there are so many parties which are in the end which contributed to this development.
Can we say that Checkpoint Charlie has become politicized?
From my point of view, it has become politicized, absolutely. And the parties in the coalition were forced to develop a position regarding the future of this place. And insofar there were various people from the urban public, from professionals, few residents in getting involved into this process. And the project was politicized, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, reflecting on what we've heard in relation to our podcast, Marcus, what we want to achieve in the podcast as we establish it, I suppose you think what we learn about politics from Checkpoint Charlie, and what you learn about activism more generally, and of course it has been politicized. Within this more formal process, it seems, around kind of media, main media outlets in Berlin and these expert groups, and but certainly there's been a politicization there, and what is interesting, I think, though, is that this tension between the place, Checkpoint Charlie, this the kind of the paradox of it, in a way that seems to have so much. It seems to be a really important place, particularly people aren't from Berlin. You always seem to imagine Checkpoint Charlie must be this really important place. But for lots of people in Berlin, it isn't that important. It doesn't seem like it's a place that gets them really emotional. When you are here, you can understand that. And that in some way explains how this politicization occurred through media pressure and through expert groups expressing themselves and putting pressure on this left coalition. And it was interesting that Christophe said that, you know, if there hadn't been this pressure, you wouldn't have had a noticeably different, necessarily a noticeably different development under a left coalition of the Social Democrats, the Greens and the Left Party than you might have had under a Christian Democrat, a Social Democrat coalition. It might have just run the same way if there hadn't been that that intervention. And I suppose that trying to think what that means, there's something about how hard it is to connect those kind of places to other forms of politics in a place that has lots of forms of politics. You know, there's lots of urban politics in Berlin, but it hasn't connected necessarily to these other kind of broader movements around public space. You know, what Genberg was talking about, you know, how you take plot for plot to say, look, it's take it back into public ownership and make it democratic. And that can only, of course, the state can do that, but you can only build a coalition to do that if you have some kind of broader sense of a political project or purpose. And there hasn't been that connecting up of different projects in Berlin or political movements at the moment around housing and gentrification and around these specific sites you mentioned, other empty spaces in Berlin or empty buildings that there might have been. And that would have been something that might have been transformative. And that also probably says something about how fragmented social movements and activism is, and you know, how hard it is to build that coalition, even when you have informal politics, a quite conducive situation to allow for that. You know, much more conducive than you would have if it was the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats, you would think, at least theoretically. And then you start thinking, of course, about what does that mean about activism? And, you know, when you start thinking about all these big slogans, right to city and urban commons, all these things that we sometimes think are too big, or they lose their meaning very quickly because they get co-opted. But then you realize that you do need these big ideas, or certainly need some kind of way of creating a coalition or creating interest. So the place is not—it's not just about Checkpoint Charlie; it's about democratic ownership of the space. You know, so it becomes something bigger than it is. So I don't know if I have a conclusion, but I think it's an interesting case for lots of reasons, but particularly thinking about our podcast and going forward, it shows lots of dimensions of the current political context, not just in Berlin, but in other cities elsewhere.
Yes, I think you put it beautifully. What lessons can we draw out of this experience, or what lessons can people outside of Berlin possibly draw out of this experience?
Of course, one very important lesson for me is that there are in such a process windows of opportunities which you can open up as engaged public. So what I would like to say is simply that the urban development projects like at Checkpoint Charlie are not predetermined. There are options during this process, and this is very important to believe in democratic, participatory involvement in urban development. So this is one lesson. A second lesson is simply that you should never automatically trust a left-wing government. There is always a keen eye of the interested public needed on their concrete actions. Otherwise, they can do also a very conventional urban development politics. So get involved there. So, and the third lesson is for me, the question how concrete matters of concern in urban development and concrete issue publics get connected to broader discourses of democracy, political formation, inequalities, and so on. And how are those discourses mobilized in concrete interventions? And or in how far are those bigger narratives not so important to change some concrete matter of concern? So this is from an academic point of view, quite interesting. So these are the three lessons I take out of this case.
In this episode, Reclaiming the Tourist City, we have looked at the controversy around the Checkpoint Charlie development and the approaches that the left-wing government has taken. We give you the last word, Christoph. Did a reclaiming of this tourist city at Checkpoint Charlie take place?
I would ask a little bit more precise, what exactly should or could be reclaimed at a place like Checkpoint Charlie? Firstly, the case of Checkpoint Charlie renders visible an ongoing and older debate about how to deal with heritage. Should we clear the way for a Disney-esque heritage industry, or do we find other ways of remembering at such places? So the fact that there will not be a Hard Rock Hotel with Cold War exhibits in the lounge speaks clearly for reclaiming the heritage value to a certain degree. Tourism valorization or tourism-driven valorization is stopped to a certain degree. But on the other hand, it is still an open question in how far the planned monothematic museum about the Cold War will push touristification and musealization ahead. So I would sum up that to a certain degree, the heritage value is reclaimed, but there are other aspects which can be reclaimed as well. For example, the regarding the question of basic tourism infrastructures. So that means the decision to build 300 apartments at this place instead of a hotel is a clear statement to ask a more general question, which is, how much hotels do we need in inner cities? How much souvenir shops do we need in inner cities? How much retail places? So when we have a look at other cities, like for example Barcelona, where we find a hotel ban, or in Amsterdam we find a souvenir shop ban, if you want it like that, we see that there is a debate going on about these tourism infrastructures and in how far we need ever more of them in inner cities. So in this respect, something was reclaimed at Checkpoint Charlie as well. And maybe another very important aspect is in how far at Checkpoint Charlie reclaiming of public democratic control over urban land took place. Until now, it is an open question whether the Federal State of Berlin will buy back parts of the empty sites. From my point of view, this is totally needed. And in this respect, the case of Checkpoint Charlie is... the case of Checkpoint Charlie is not very well connected to these bigger debates about public ownership of urban land. So this brings me to the very last point, which is that maybe tourism needs to be discussed more eagerly on a political level as a social question of urban futures. We see, for example, in the connection of gentrification and touristification, that tourism is recognized there as a powerful moment shaping the urban. But I think as well in urban studies and of course also in urban politics, tourism needs to be taken more seriously into account as a very, very intense and powerful power shaping urban futures.
Thank you, Christoph. Thank you for listening to the Urban Political.
For more information, visit our website urbanpolitical.podig.io.
Please subscribe and follow us on Twitter